Hey, it's Cameo, and welcome. Just like you, I wear many hats, and sometimes I feel overwhelmed by the demands of everyday life. And there was a time when I felt lost, stuck, and unsure of how or where to start the transformation that I needed. And that's why we're here, to share experiences, lessons, tools, and tips for shaking up your life and living for you. I'm glad you're here, so let's get into it. Hello and welcome to the Cameo Show. Today we are joined by Jackie Stewart. Jackie is a friend of ours. We are fortunate to have her in our lives. She's married to my childhood best friend, and that's how we met. But she is such an important part of our journey and our transformation because she is the one who we've referenced in previous podcasts as the person who made meditation available for us and made meditation something that wasn't weird. It was something that we could implement and in a digestible way so that we could understand exactly what the goal and intention of the practice is. So Jackie, we are thrilled to have you. I know that you have so much to share, so much knowledge, so much experience. So thank you so much for sharing your time with us and for being who you are and being such an important part of our journey. We are forever grateful to you for all of that.
Thank you so much, Cameo. And it's good to be with both of you, you and Greg. So I think it might be useful for me to just dive in and share about my own introduction to meditation, how I got started on my path.
We would love that. That'd be beautiful.
Yeah. Okay. So I sort of have two introductions, and I'll keep the first one really brief because that's how it was for me in my life. The first time that I formally came into meditation was in college, which I already feel really fortunate, you know, to, I think I may have been 19 at the time, come upon these practices. But in college, I was taking a course called Leading as a Way of Serving, which is already to me such a beautiful, I just love that a course like that would exist, you know, something about servant leadership. And that part of that course was all of us going to the Zen Mountain Center in California. And I can't remember if it was a weekend or a week that we spent there, but it just revealed to me this whole other possibility of how humans can be and live. Because up until that point, I had only known the world that I was living in or the way that I was shown or what was going on in my surroundings. And so it was for the, you know, the very first time that I was invited to sit and eat a meal in silence. And maybe for other people, this doesn't sound like a really big deal, but for me at the time, I had never considered just sitting and eating my meal in silence, just doing the thing that I was doing, right? Because for me, growing up in Southern California, I was grabbing a burrito and jumping in my car and going to the next place. So not only was it this introduction and practice of actually sitting and just attending to whatever it was that you were doing, but also really giving room to the contemplation that all of this didn't just magically show up in front of me either. That this salad or whatever it was that was in front of me passed through so many caring hands, that somebody grew these vegetables and watered them and nurtured them and picked them and brought them into a kitchen and prepared them. And now they're in front of me. So all of a sudden, this experience that for me so often becomes taken for granted is like, this is a meditation on interdependence, that without all of these beautiful hands that this food passed through, I might not have this meal right now. So that was just the kind of introduction to another way of thinking, another way of really kind of being open to a more contemplative way of relating to life, everyday life things like that. And I think because I was in college, I walked away from that experience thinking meditation was really awesome. It was a really great idea, but probably not something that I was going to take on as kind of a daily practice. But, you know, really walked away feeling connected to it and loving the idea. And it wasn't until I'd moved to New York City and I was in a relationship with Jimmy, your childhood friend that you mentioned earlier. So I was in a relationship with him at the time. we had called off our engagement. We were engaged. We called off, maybe I had called off our engagement. I was also just in this very, maybe I would call it success-oriented place, success in my mind, thinking that if I checked off all of these boxes, then I would be happy, right? I went to college. I went to grad school. I went through this training to become an actor, and I was acting at the time. So if I'm on a TV show, then I'll be happy, right? If I buy an apartment in the city, then I'll be happy, right? The relationship. And I just found myself checking off all of these boxes, these measures for what I thought success was, which equates to happiness, right? And it just wasn't measuring up for me. It wasn't that. I found myself having checked off all of those boxes and then just feeling like, why am I still feeling so subtly dissatisfied? Like there's just something in me that isn't quite content, and I don't know how to even meet this. And so I had a really, really dear and incredible friend who I went to college with. He is the type of person that after college sold all of his belongings and moved to South America and then traveled the world and just had, you know, a beautiful perspective on things. And so, of course, he was the person I called on. And he just said, you know, Jackie, it sounds like you just need to come home to yourself. Like you need to come back to you and remember what it is that is most deeply meaningful for you, because there's so much of this kind of external reaching that's happening. You're looking to all of these external factors and conditions to find the sense of happiness. And that's not where we're going to find it. We have to come back inward to do that. And so along his travels, he had a really wonderful experience at this monastery called Kopan in Nepal, and just said, you've got to get yourself there. Go, it'll be amazing. It'll change your life. And at the time I just thought, oh, that sounds really incredible. I'd love to go to Nepal. You know, I'll find some time at some point to do this. And he just said, you're never going to find the time to go to Nepal. You just need to book a ticket and go. Mm. And that was the best advice that he could have possibly given me, because I did that. I think within a month, I had rearranged my schedule and found myself sitting in a 10-day retreat at this monastery in Nepal, and just finding that my whole world was kind of flipped inside out in the most confronting and beautiful way. I mean, the external conditions of being there, right, were already things that I had to get used to. I was showering outside. The water was cold. You know, they were very simple accommodations. So there were those things that I was getting used to. And then during the teachings, I was sort of having a mirror held up to me through the things that were being shared and how the word that was used a lot was self-importance. Mm-hmm. All the ways that the world is just oriented around me and what I want and what I think is good or bad or right or wrong, and mostly me seeing how I was pointing the finger out at everything else being the problem and not me. And yeah. So it was really kind of being shown that maybe it's the way that I was relating to everything. Maybe it's the way that the perspective that I happen to be holding, that was really revelatory for me. And in many ways, it cracked my heart open to just remembering how interconnected we are as human beings, how I felt like I had probably wasted a lot of time being so self-oriented, and just remembering how beautiful all the connections and relationships around me are. And that when I'm focused in this way, it's ironic because my friend said to go in this way, but there's such a different way of going inward versus just being kind of self-oriented. But it was a beautiful, beautiful experience. And I also got to sit in meditation and just see how wild my mind was. You know, that we would sit in meditation and the instructions would be offered. And, you know, the instruction was, anytime you find that you get distracted by something, to come back to your breath. And I just thought, is it just 30 seconds? Like, is it just every 30 seconds for everyone else? Because that is totally my experience, you know, that my mind is just constantly drifting off or being pulled away. And it took a while for me to just learn to become comfortable with that. That this is what I'm getting to know. I'm just getting to know how restless my mind is. And that in and of itself was not only uncomfortable, but a huge process of learning and growing for me. Mm-hmm. So when I came back to New York from that experience, because, you know, I think there was a part of me that thought, wouldn't it be great if I could just stay at the monastery? You know, then surely I'll have a more kind of protected space and container to be able to really learn these practices. But from my understanding, so much of it is about coming back into the world and engaging in the relationships, engaging in everyday life, and really seeing how these practices can support us and maybe even be the catalyst for practicing in deeper ways when we're not just holding this idea that this can only happen in a cave, or it can only happen in a very protected, secluded, quiet, peaceful environment, that I can come back into New York City and stay connected to this. And so that's where I had found the Interdependence Project, which you referenced earlier, as a place that I felt like had a wonderful platform where they brought together art, meditation, and activism. And there were just a lot of young, like-minded people that I felt like I could connect with, because also what I had found, or at least was my experience, is that most other people who were interested in meditation or Buddhism were maybe on the end of the scale where they're closer to retirement and have time to really explore those aspects of their mind and their experience. So it felt really good to find young people to have these conversations with.
Yes, that's all so beautiful and interesting. So thank you for sharing, because we know you as the person who introduced meditation to us and kind of our meditation and mindfulness teacher, but didn't really know any of that backstory. And so that's such an amazing testament to turning within, experiencing it in your own way, and then being able to project that out into the world through your teaching. And I think that it's also very interesting and so relatable that you were busy on to the next thing, searching for all these checklist items. Then I'll be happy, because I feel like that's something that we all feel at some point, and that it is almost not even an option to think that everything that I need is all in here if I just give myself the time and the space and nurture that and foster it inside of myself, what you can discover. It's so externally focused, and it's a trap, because I still find myself, even with these tools and this practice, I still find myself in this trap of associating how I feel or my value or my worth or my success in my mind based on accomplishments and checklists, even armed with the tools and with the practice. So I can't imagine where I would find myself without having these tools, or left unchecked, so to speak, in this way of thinking and in this way of connecting with myself through things like I'm putting together a puzzle. So you mentioned like bringing it back to New York City through things like doing a puzzle, or through things like running. I've been able to implement a meditation practice without just being in a cave or being in a sitting position. And I just find that to be so entirely what I need at the moment, and a way that people maybe don't view meditation. So if you could kind of pick up back into New York City, you're a model, you're acting, you're in a relationship, life is busy all around you. You find the Interdependence Project, you connect with younger people who are like-minded, and there's this sense of maybe purpose that you found in this group. Is that how you began teaching? Is that, there's this connectedness? How did that become your focus as you were still doing all of those other things?
Yeah, that's a great question and a beautiful segue, because I was actually really trying to figure out what my purpose was, you know, you using that word. And maybe it's a word that comes up a lot for young people too. I think we're just trying to figure out, like, what am I supposed to do? What is this whole thing about? Like, why am I here? What is my purpose? And I think I came back really wanting to uncover that or figure that out for myself, and was putting a lot of pressure on myself to figure that out. The Interdependence Project at the time wasn't a place where I necessarily was finding purpose. It was a way where I could just be reminded, like you're saying, you had just said, be reminded that all of these things that I'm looking for in an external way, I'm looking for this validation, are right here within me. So going there was almost like a refuge. It was almost like a reminder, a place that I could plug into and feel like I could become filled up and then kind of go back into the world and orient myself. So because I was really looking for this sense of purpose, what am I doing? At the time, I wasn't feeling ultimately fulfilled in the careers that I was in, modeling and acting. I feel very fortunate to have had wonderful careers in both, but there was just something, my truth was coming forward, right? There was just something that wasn't it for me. And so in the process of trying to figure out, you know, what is my purpose, a dear, dear, dear person in my life, who actually just recently passed, but he is such a prominent part of my journey, my transformation, my evolution. His name is Perch. And he worked with organizations in leadership and empowerment, but he was really kind of a life coach before life coaches were a thing. You know, he was kind of ahead of the game. And so he was really a kind of confidant for me. And so I was just talking to him and, you know, he would hear me talk about it over and over. What's my purpose? I just don't know. What should I start a nonprofit? You know, should I? And I was just thinking of all these things. And he was so generous and so wise in what he said. He just said, you know, Jackie, I think it would really be beneficial if you just took the pressure off of yourself, because when we're coming at something with that kind of angst and energy, we don't have the same open-mindedness and possibilities that would be there if we were in a place of exploration and wonder and excitement. So he just said, if you can, you know, maybe hold off on switching gears, like so black and white, keep doing what you're doing. But if you can, give yourself 6 months or a year to just figure out what turns you on. Like, what do you get excited about or lit up about? Like, what does your heart want to do when you wake up in the morning? And it was such a beautiful invitation, because I don't think I'd ever given myself the permission to do that.
It's hard to like shut that off and just be. You're a highly motivated person. You know, all three of us on this call are very motivated. And it's like, it's hard to just be and give yourself 6 months to a year for anything. It's like, what? I got to do it now, you know?
Yeah. And it's true. And I felt that angst and that need to just keep going. I've got to keep going. Right. And it was really just like, if you're coming from that place, it's going to be impossible to find. Mm-hmm. And so it was so beautiful for me to just take that step back and allow myself to really wonder and daydream a little bit and just say, God, if I could do anything right now, if I could do anything with this little bit of time that I have or this free time in the day, what would I do? And I just said, I want to learn more about meditation. That was it impacted me so deeply. And there's something that feels so rich and fulfilling about that experience. I want to know more about that. And because I had at that point been practicing regularly for quite some time, I was also going to various Dharma talks throughout the city. And my experience was that I could get some information here and hear a teaching there. And they felt like beautiful gems that I could collect, but it didn't feel like, from my Western trained and educated mind, what does this look like more in a more linear way? I really want to understand it more thoroughly. Are there steps that I can just get? Basically, I wanted it to be more organized.
Sure.
To really be able to understand, you know, the mechanics that were at work, how deep this goes. And so I thought, just through what I had experienced at the time, the only way to do that was to do a teacher training. And so the Interdependence Project was offering a teacher training. It was starting that next January. And so I just said, That's what I want to do. And it happened to be a year long, which is also so timely, so kind of perfect based on that timeline, in that so many teacher trainings, even now, that are offered are 3 months or 5 months or 6 months that I felt like, what a beautiful way to just go on a very thorough journey into something and really get to see how I even show up over the course of a whole year. We change mm-hmm. all the time. So to just have that kind of alongside me, I thought was really wonderful. So I decided to do a teacher training, not with any intention to teach, to be honest. It wasn't like, I'm going to do this so I can teach. I was like, I'm really just here to learn, to truly be a student. And I was such a nerd with it. I just dove in, and we had our weekends, which was part of the training, but as a supplement, you know, it was offered to us. You can come during the week and really just take any classes because you're doing the training. So I was at every single class. I think it was like Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights, just because I loved it. It was like, I'm swimming in the juice of everything that's being shared. And it was just singing to my heart. I loved everything that I was learning, using purchase words. It was turning me on. You know what I mean? I would leave just so enlivened, you know, it just kind of woke me up, you know, both metaphorically, and that was my experience, was just really being energized by it. And so toward the end of my training, probably because they saw my enthusiasm and maybe even my level of availability, obviously, because I was there so much, they just said, Jackie, we're going to start this community class. It's the first time we're going to do an online community offering. It'll be based on donation, and we'd really love for you to lead it. And when they asked me to do that, I was overwhelmed. I was totally anxious and nervous and just thought, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I can't believe you're entrusting me with this. I have no idea what I'm doing. And I feel so deeply grateful for everything that I learned that at this point, anything you asked me to do, I would do. You know what I mean? So it was one of those things where they asked me and I was like, of course I'll do it. And oh my God, I can't believe this is happening.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was called Sit Anywhere Sunday.
Yeah.
And that's again, a perfect segue. That was when Greg and I were dabbling, but kind of officially introduced to mindfulness and meditation through your teachings on Sundays. We would literally run to the bedroom and tell the kids who were young at the time, hey, we just want an hour. Just leave us alone for an hour. You know, beat on the door if something bad is happening, but let us have this hour where you would so beautifully lay out a concept or a principle and then lead us through a guided meditation at the end. And we lived for it. Like, we could not wait for Sundays, and we tried to make each and every one of them. And so thank you for doing that. And thank you for being a part of our life in that way, because it was so impactful. It wasn't Nepal, but it was the next best thing, because it felt like a very intimate experience that we were able to have with someone who we knew, so it made it comfortable, but someone who was so enthusiastic and so knowledgeable and so intentional about your delivery that it was probably one of the most single important things that we did during that time for our marriage, for our lifestyle, for the changes that we were going through. During that year, how had you recognized like how this was impacting your own life in a way that you could deliver it into the weekly teaching?
Yeah, that's a good question. And at this point, it was so long ago. It feels like a lifetime ago when I was doing that.
It kind of was. It was like, gosh, when was that? Maybe 2016, 2015?
Probably. That sounds
which
about
is
right.
Like almost a decade, which seems insane to even say. But yeah, it was a while ago.
Cameo said this, but it was something that you were doing. You were compelled to do it. You were drawn to do it. And by you providing that space and saying, join me Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock for this hour-long call where we'll meditate and I'll give you some concepts, things to think about. At that time, we were really in a spot. in our lives. You know, we had just moved to Florida and we were kind of just resetting our whole existence and refiguring out, like you said, you know, I've got all these external things, but I need to be happy in here. Yes. And by you doing that and creating that space for us and allowing us to, we were open to trying it, you know, and trying something weird like meditation. You know, at that same time, we were also doing the church thing because that's the normal thing to do. You go to church, you know, and it's like, wow, this is an hour to just sit and be with ourselves and to quiet the voice in our head and have some concepts. And one of those concepts still is with me today. Like you're no joke, still with us. So like if I'm doing the dishes or doing some task, like Cameo's been doing a puzzle a lot of this weekend. And it's really just meditating on I'm doing this puzzle and or I'm doing the dishes and I'm really focused on doing the dishes. Not I'm physically doing the dishes and my mind is racing about this report I need to do. And like, you know, you gave us permission to just do the dishes, you know, and like it seems so silly and such a basic thing. But if you are aware of it, that's where it all starts. And if you're just aware of like, gosh, my mind is going crazy. I'm doing the dishes, but I'm thinking of 10 other things. No wonder I'm anxious. You know, it's like, but taking the time now, it's like, I don't mind doing the dishes because I'm like, this is my time to kind of meditate, be with myself and just kind of, you know, appreciate this task at hand. So, but just in general, I mean, that time in our lives, it was something we really looked forward to and it made our week. It was a great part of the week. If we could keep the kids from interrupting our quiet space, you know, but it was a great, great opportunity and great experience. So thank you for doing that. It was a big deal for us.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. It's really, really, truly meaningful for me to hear what your experience was like. And you might even be inspiring me to start Sunday nights back up because it is a sweet time, you know, kind of winding down, gearing up for the week to be able to land and come back to yourself before starting something like that. Greg, I'd love to pick up on something you just said, and it goes back to Cameo, your question or your prompt that you just offered, which is how valuable these practices are in everyday life moments, and whether it's having that life moment and then bringing it into a moment of teaching, or, you know, having it transcend that into, you know, however it cycles through, whether it's something I experienced teaching about it, but continuing to see how important these meditation practices are for whatever it is that we're doing. So for example, you used washing the dishes. Can I give myself permission to just wash the dishes, or to just fold the laundry, or to just walk from point A to point B? In a way, it's such a beautiful metaphor for what we're practicing when we sit in formal meditation, because this is my experience. So I'll speak from my experience, but there is something freeing in that, where in this moment, when I'm doing this thing, I don't have to carry 10,000 other things with me and have this load on my back and just feel like I'm constantly carrying the weight of the world and all of my to-dos and my goals and things people said or I should be doing or whatever it is. For this little bit of time, I can just set all of that to the side and give myself the opportunity to fully be present and engage with this really simple thing. And as we do that, my sense is that we start to understand that me just doing this thing in this moment is actually enough. I don't have to be impressive. I don't have to wear this really great mask that says, Jackie is this really high achiever who gets everything done. You know, I don't have to be on for anybody. This is enough. Me just being here with all of my presence, giving my attention, which if we're talking about the world of achievement and making money and whatnot, our attention is probably the most valuable asset that anyone is after. So the fact that I am consciously giving my full attention to this experience, so it's not just the dishes, but it's also my experience that I'm having as I'm attending to this thing, that I'm not just having that sense of this is enough, but also right now I'm enough. I don't have to be chasing anything else. I don't have to be filling this moment with any other blah, blah, blah. There's something very whole and complete right here in and of itself. And for me, that's really healing. Coming from the culture and society that I was brought up in, that I live in, you know, and even to be able to instill that in my family life with my kids, you know, and when we talk about, you know, practice in these moments, those are beautiful opportunities to do the practice. For me, I'm practicing. My practice shows up when my son is screaming at me at the top of his lungs that he doesn't want that pair of shoes, or that I didn't do it the way that he wanted me to, or even him calling me out on something, you know, like, you didn't ask me first, you know, and all of a sudden he becomes my teacher. And it's like, you know what? You're right. I didn't ask you. I'm really sorry, because I know that's something that we talk about, that I talk about all the time, you know, whatever it is. Is it okay if I use the towel to dry your hair, or, you know, whatever it might be that I didn't ask, that he's asserting himself in a beautiful way, in which I hope for him to do, to be able to speak those things. So it's interesting to also see, you know, where my practice shows up in the line of fire sometimes, you know, when the stakes are really high, when I'm also triggered, and being able to navigate, I'm navigating this human's emotions, and I'm also simultaneously navigating my own emotions around this, because you just pushed all my buttons. And sometimes I'll lose it, and sometimes I'll blow up, and sometimes I can respond in a way that I want to, in a way that feels skillful, that feels like how I talk to him about how I hope that we can resolve things. And it's a constant practice.
Mm-hmm. I think it's so beautiful that you mentioned, in just doing the dishes or whatever task, it's an opportunity to grant yourself the notion that I am enough, that what I'm doing is enough, that I am enough. And that is something that I think we battle constantly, just in general as humans. In my experience doing a puzzle, the first few hours, the entire time I had to have a conversation with the mean lady that lives wherever she lives in my body, but up here as a frame of reference in my brain, because she was telling me, like, there's 100 other things you should be doing. This is selfish. You're like in the back room of the house, isolating yourself doing this puzzle. And it was a practice of navigating my emotions and navigating the challenge that lives within me to say, what I'm doing right now, I enjoy. It's healthy for me to have this moment. And you need to just stop being so harsh and so ridiculous and critical of yourself and be in this moment. You are enough. So these tiny tasks that we do on a day-to-day basis that are checklist items can be an opportunity to invite this practice into our lives. And I think that that might be a misunderstanding, that if I'm going to meditate, I need to sit down and formally meditate, quiet, cross my legs, get some, so what are these called?
The mudras
going. And it just is not the case. I also really appreciate how you shared that that has translated into motherhood now for you. And that's a very personal experience, but also so relatable, because I think pre-meditation, I was a completely different woman, but also a very different mother in a way that I am so grateful for now, especially as the kids are older and they're teens and we're navigating different things that require me to be responsive and not reactive, that likely would not have been going as smoothly as it has, or, you know, that, you know, we have our moments, of course, and we all lose it, but it would have been a lot more frequent bombs going off. without these practices and this recognition and this appreciation for myself, but also the space to take a deep breath and say, okay, you are a person, I am a person, we see things differently. That doesn't mean that either of us are right or wrong. It just means that we're experiencing this moment at the same time. How can we navigate this so that we both feel seen, heard, respected? And that comes from knowing myself through this practice and implementing that as a mom as well. So can you share more about your experience as you've gone through the teaching and you've done the practice, the Sit Anywhere Sundays, how you have implemented that into your marriage, into motherhood, and some of the teaching and training that you do now with moms? Because I think that's such an interesting yet overlooked opportunity for so many women and men, you too, Greg, fathers, to indulge upon.
One of the things that stood out was how this practice really shows up in my marriage, right? And how I might relate to my husband. And so there's the part of having your practice and knowing yourself, your own tendencies, your own triggers. And then there's having this whole other human being who has their history and upbringing, and the way that he was raised was very different than the way that I was raised. And he has all of his own triggers. So it's getting to know my mind and, you know, my whole kind of emotional background that I bring to it. And over time, rather than, I mean, and he'll still trigger me, so I'm not going to say that that doesn't happen. But in the moments when that trigger is there, is to really hold it with as much spaciousness as possible. Because yes, of course, what he said or did just landed for me a certain way. But what my practice has done in terms of just helping to expand things and open things up is to remember that there is a whole person over there that might have had an assumption about what was going on, or he thought he was actually being helpful when in my interpretation, it was the farthest thing from being helpful. Right. And just to be able to create some space for that, like, oh, I'm going to acknowledge that, of course, we both have a whole different set of things that are trailing us and we're meeting in this moment. And for me, over time, you know, aside from working through my own emotions, my commitment has really been to see his basic goodness. So basic goodness is a term that comes up a lot in meditation, but specifically in Buddhism. You know, this notion of whether we want to call it basic goodness or Buddha nature is to just continue to stay committed to seeing that at this person's core, at my husband's core, he is good. He means well. He's actually trying to be helpful or do something that he thinks is going to contribute in a beneficial way. Even if it's not, that's where he's coming from. You know, that even if, let's just say there was an ill-intentioned thing that came through, that beneath that even is some part of him that even Camille, like you mentioning that inner critic in you, like even those parts of us, they need love. Those are the parts of us that actually need the most love and to be seen in that way. And so it's been a long journey for me because I would judge that part of him or judge, you know, the parts that I saw as not well-meaning, but to over time just continue to align myself with seeing, even if you're doing something that feels really unskillful or not helpful for me right now, that part of you needs so much compassion. And I'm not saying that from a place of like, I'm above you and you're below me, because that's a conversation that he and I have even gotten into. Like, I mean, I just feel like you would be pitying a person if you're having compassion for them. And I said, it's not the case, because I have all those things too, right? I have my inner critic. I have the parts of me that are trying to be well-meaning or well-intentioned, and they just come out all wrong, or I end up shouting because that's my response in this moment. But underneath that, it was the best I could do in that moment. It was all I had to try to express myself, right? It was the six-year-old version of Jackie trying to just get heard in that moment. And if we judge those parts of ourselves, we lock that six-year-old little girl up even farther. And that's not the path, right? It's being able to honor, hear, and love those parts of us in whatever way we can, whether it's me doing that on my end, or being able to see that that might be what my husband is needing right now, is actually just that little six-year-old boy inside of him that only knows how to say it this way because he doesn't know otherwise, because he didn't learn it otherwise. You know, like he just didn't, that wasn't part of his practice at some point. And now he is practicing in a different way, you know, but to just learn to hold things with so much more gentleness and tenderness. That's been a huge part of my practice, in specifically my marriage, right? Is because it's like understanding all those parts of me and then saying, well, he's no different, right? I, at the end of the day, am trying to be happy and at peace and not have difficulty in my life. And he's the same, you know? Yeah. And so just being able to see that, for me, that's where the compassion comes. It's not like, oh, poor you, you're going through this, but like, no, I get it. That's really frustrating. You know, I know how frustrating it is to want to express something in a more beautiful way. And it just came out really messed up. Like it just came out in a way that actually caused more harm. And then that's painful, right? To see that even with my kids, right? That if there's been a moment where something happened and I lost my patience and I shouted at them, I sit with that. Right. I'm sitting with that. And at first it came up as a lot of mom guilt, like, oh, these are the things that I'm teaching. How can I be shouting at my kids? This just feels so yucky. And then it was like, oh my God, this part of me just actually needs so much support. And I need to just acknowledge and see and hear the fact that this mama had a moment of being overwhelmed, of this is a lot. This is a lot, you know, to have two kids in the bathtub shouting at each other or whatever, and you're trying to keep them safe. And within me also just wanting that happiness and peace and calm. And that's not what's happening. And to just be able to say, oh, yeah, of course, this is a moment where I actually just need to put my hand on my heart and offer myself so much love and compassion. Like for me to continue beating myself up would actually only further this kind of self-aggression that's happening. The way to work through that is to do the opposite, right? Is rather than continue to beat myself up, to continue to be hard on myself, is to actually just come and give her a hug. To see that there was a moment of falling apart or losing patience, and that's okay. And I'm human and it'll happen. And in the next moment, I have options, right? It doesn't mean I'm a bad person. It means that going forward, I can take a deep breath and begin again for myself. And then I can also reach out to my kids and just say, so sorry that happened. I lost my patience. I got really frustrated. You know, sometimes when I get frustrated, it's really helpful for me to take a couple deep breaths. And I didn't do that right now. I shouted instead. So I'm going to take a couple deep breaths now, because now is when I'm remembering to do it. And so my hope then too, by doing that, is to show my kids that it's not about being perfect. It's not about being calm all the time or having it together, but that we can be human. And when we have those moments of falling apart, that we can reach out and reconnect with each other.
They learn a lot from when we make mistakes and then own it and apologize. I mean, it's so easy to just act like we're perfect all the time, but we're not. They learn a lot from maybe hearing a little argument. And then how do you recover from that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. And I'll say for me also, my meditation practice, I think, has really helped me just become more honest about my experience. Mm-hmm. Because as you said, it can be so easy to just want to make things look like they're okay and things are all right over here. When things are not all right, it's really helpful to just say things are not all right right now. You know, I am having this thing come up for me. And there's something so not just honest, but there's something so caring in that. Like we're giving ourselves that attention that would otherwise maybe be more externally focused. Like, why am I trying to hold it together? It's so other people don't think that I am losing my stuff, you know, or whatever. So it's that same thing where it's like, I'm actually turning my attention back toward myself and offering this really caring lens to just saying, this is really hard right now, or I'm not okay. And a big part of the practice is developing the confidence to be okay with not being okay.
Mm-hmm. It's so beautiful that you said, I can just take a deep breath and begin again. Mm. I can come into the next moment with options. I think it's extremely relatable, especially mom guilt and, you know, as you're parenting to constantly get stuck in this loop of, I have it all together. I'm the boss. For me, in my experience, it was, you know, from my upbringing, but also from other external factors that influenced me, it was very authoritative. Not that my parents were like extreme, but I'm the mom, this is how we're doing things. And early on, that created a lot of conflict that I didn't know how to navigate. I didn't know how to teach my children through. And as this practice became something that was normal and implemented in our day-to-day activities, it has created space for me to be in those moments with the kids and know what I need, because I know myself. There's an honesty level with myself that maybe I'm not able to articulate well to the people around me, but that I understand within myself that allows me to show up in those moments in a way that I wouldn't have a decade ago, or when the children, when our kids were really little and I was flailing about. And I think for a lot of moms, there's so much pressure to have it all together and to have the clean house and to always know what's for dinner and to the children are well behaved and I look perfect and I'm on the PTO and all of the things you should be doing without giving ourselves any type of compassion or empathy that we might extend to others. And so being able to say that in the way that you did and so beautifully articulate that when they're fighting in the bathtub, if I didn't handle it properly, I know how to handle that situation. But I also know that I can show up next time with options. I also know that I can begin again with a simple breath. All small things that are so impactful to just implement in our day-to-day as we navigate traffic and we navigate conflict with others outside of our own home, that I just am not sure there's enough focus or awareness on the conversation around it, that it is okay to not be okay. And that it is okay to give yourself permission to say that and to feel that and to be with that and then know what to do with it next. So thank you for sharing all of that personal experience, because it's so, so relatable. It's not something people are jumping out ready to talk about openly all the time. We don't show up to a girl's night out and share that. We share all the highlights, right? Social media, the highlight reel. But that's such a real relatable experience, and also such an easy way to understand how you can give yourself some love and give yourself some compassion in each and every one of those day-to-day moments. So with that being said, you currently teach in mom-oriented groups, yes?
Yeah. So thank you for asking about that. While I was teaching with Mindful, which is a studio here in New York City, which no longer has a physical space, but it was through them that I first started collaborating with another teacher and mother on how to just offer these practices, because it felt like it was really not just beneficial for me personally, and I think for her as well, having these practices, but just seeing that it was almost a lifeline. For anyone who is a parent, you have a full-time job parenting, and then everything else that you do in your life, you know, whether you also work or have interests or other organizations that you might be involved with, it just ends up being full on undertaking. So we felt like it was a lifeline and necessary. So that's where it really began. And then I have the wonderful fortune to have partnered with my birth educator, actually. Her name is Mary Esther Malloy, and she has her organization called Mindful Birth New York. So I took all of my birthing classes with her, and I just loved her approach. She just spoke to my heart. Everything that she said, I just felt like, yes, you are spot on. And I don't know anything about this. I don't know anything about birthing a human being. And so that relationship was really beautiful. And over time, we just cultivated this really sweet connection. And when we reconnected with the birth of my second son, we both discovered that we had the same meditation teacher. And so we got all fired up about that. And she just said, Jackie, we should collaborate. You know, it would be so wonderful for you to do some kind of offering with meditation for the moms in the community that I have, because it is so necessary. And so we went, basically I used the way that Tara Brach has the framework of RAIN. I used those as a model for just working through using the same acronym. And so just for those of you that might not be familiar, RAIN is an acronym that has been modified from its original practice, but in the way that I used it and that Tara Brach is most recently using it is to recognize, allow, investigate with interest, and nurture. So we're recognizing what might be coming up for us in the moment, just acknowledging something as simple as I'm getting tense. Right. And it can be as elaborate as I'm experiencing anger or fear. Right. But it can just be I'm having a tense moment right now. So recognizing, allowing. So often when we have a moment of discomfort or we start to feel an emotion arise, our tendency is usually to block it, resist it, stuff it down. I'm not having this experience right now. Or we indulge in it and it completely overtakes us and we can get hijacked by it. So when we can allow for it, we're kind of taking a step back from being pulled on either end of the spectrum. And we're just kind of letting ourselves have this moment. We also carry, I'll again speak for myself, I have the experience of also carrying a little bit of baggage around emotions, right? This is a good one. This is a bad one. I don't like feeling this way. I would prefer to feel this way. So just by seeing that, I think helps us see through an emotion as just being an emotion. You know, a moment of anxiety is a moment of anxiety. And where we get tripped up is where we have anxiety about the anxiety. Or we get angry about feeling angry. It's like how yes. relating to it that is actually the issue. Which is interesting when we start to really unpack our mind and our experience. Like, wow, it's not actually the emotion itself. It's the fact that I'm so triggered by this emotion or I'm so uncomfortable with the fact that it's here, right? So if we can just give ourselves a little bit of space to allow and even to allow for all the secondary things that come up, right? Like I'm anxious and now I'm anxious about the anxiety. Can I also just give myself space to have all of these feelings about everything that's coming up? Sometimes that's enough, right? And sometimes we can just do the first two steps. Sometimes we can give ourselves the opportunity to investigate a little bit more, to get curious, like, what is this all about? Where is this coming from? You know, and sometimes it can also just be, you know, where is it that I'm feeling this in my body, which helps us have a more embodied experience of it. Because a lot of times we will churn up narratives or stories about a situation or the fact that we're feeling any particular way. So sometimes it might just be, I'm just feeling a lot of tension in my chest and I'm going to take an interest in that. Mm-hmm. Can I just feel this tightness in my chest right now? And when we can do that, we can also kind of ride that wave of seeing that this isn't going to be here forever, that this is momentary as well. And usually what continues us down any kind of rabbit holes or spirals are the stories that we tell ourselves that keep that emotion going. Mm-hmm. So if I can just hone in on, wow, this is just tightness in the chest. And can I just be with that in a very direct way? Sometimes it'll just kind of move on and release itself, which is really interesting. That can be really empowering also to just say, wow, I can just ride this wave out and then it's over. So there are many ways to work with the investigating piece, and then nurture, which I just think is such a beautiful way of approaching this. And it goes back to that bathtub moment that I mentioned earlier of just being able to say, oh my goodness, in all the ways that I can I just extend a little bit of gentleness to myself in this moment? Because we do have this tendency to be so hard, so critical, so judgmental about the ways that I should or shouldn't be feeling. Can I actually just be with myself in the way that I would be with my best friend if they were having a really hard time? And we might just say, can I give you a hug? Or can we just sit together with this? Or do you want to just cry with me? You know, that we actually just give ourselves that same kindness in a moment of just being nurtured in that experience. And I think that really supports us in healing some of those ways that we otherwise would relate to those emotions, you know, when we can get either hijacked or have that resistance towards them.
Yes. We love the RAIN acronym. We love Tara Brach. I think that that has been extremely helpful for both of us. And speaking from my own experience, I could recognize very easily what I was feeling. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it was anger, which is essentially a secondary emotion. So I knew I was angry, but it never went any further than that. Mm-hmm. And I definitely wasn't, you know, I would allow in my outburst, but I wasn't allowing myself to feel enough to get far into it to discover, well, what am I really feeling though underneath the anger that I'm expressing? Am I sad? Am I hurt? Do I feel vulnerable? And having RAIN as a simple tool to help me walk through those steps has reminded me in moments so many times when I'm trying to hurry my feelings along or hurry our daughter's feelings along. She's going to be 18 in 2 weeks. And, you know, there are a range of emotions that you experience as a teenager, as an 18-year-old girl who just graduated high school and whose boyfriend is an hour and a half away at college now. And so as she's feeling those emotions, as her mom, jumped in and found myself trying to help her feel better. Don't cry. It's going to be okay. And then a second later saying, actually cry if you need to cry, and allowing for that space to feel what you feel and really nurture yourself in the way that you need to, instead of just pushing through, as you mentioned, without that type of practice. And so RAIN keeps it simple, because if you can remember RAIN and you can remember what they stand for, you have a framework to walk yourself through any type of conflict or any type of emotional reactivity if you're open to it. And if you're willing and able and want to show up better to the next moment that you may experience that's similar. So thank you for explaining all of that and sharing all of that, because I think it's a very simple tool to take away. One, if you take anything away from a podcast episode or from a book, something that you can implement immediately, that's it. That's gold. That's one thing that you could easily take away among so many other things that you've shared with us.
I've got another one that just came to me. So Jackie, one of the things that is still with us today that you taught us on those Sunday calls was the meditation. So, and I'll just kind of high level this, and then it would be awesome if you could kind of go through those steps too, just like you did. But when you're going through stuff, which we all go through stuff in life, you seem to really get focused in on yourself, your pain, your situation, your anxiety, all of it. And what you taught us with metta was the whole zooming out thing. And that was just mind blowing to us. And to this day, for myself, for my friends, when I've talked to friends who are going through stuff, some of the best tools that I've been able to give away have been to be able to zoom out, to zoom to a point where you're just looking at the earth and it's just a little planet in space. And it's like, wow, you know, so could you explain the meta
meditation? Yeah. So it's so funny because you mentioned meta, like, you know, meta to kind of take a step back. And there's also a metta practice, which is a traditional loving kindness practice. So when you said that, I was like, oh, metta. And then when you talked about zooming out, I was like, ah, meta awareness, like really being able to take that step back. So thank you for clarifying, because I was about to go down a whole other path.
I went where you went, Jackie, I think, with the metta, with the extending compassion to yourself and to people who are difficult. You kind of alluded to that a little bit earlier, and I was thinking that we could possibly go there, because that is so difficult to practice compassion towards someone who has done wrongdoing or triggered emotions. But I digress. I won't jump all over the place, but I went there with you. I was like, okay, we're going there. That's great. But,
yeah. But I do think that, you know, what Greg mentioned is incredibly valuable. It's actually, so my teacher has this wonderful analogy that he uses, and you might have already heard it. Maybe I have shared it at some point, but in terms of really allowing ourselves to either find that perspective or to zoom out, he talks about awareness, our capacity to be aware, which is innate to us. It's not anything that we have to do or achieve or get to, right? It's here. Right now, we can acknowledge that we're in a room and we might be listening to something or looking at something, and there's no effort required for an awareness. So awareness is like the sky, right? It's vast, it's open, it has the capacity to accommodate absolutely everything. And our experiences, emotions included, are like clouds passing through the sky. And just having that framework to reference is so helpful, because it gives space to everything. And it also has that reminder that I'm not that thing. Even though it might feel like I'm in the cloud and I can't see past this moment of anger or whatever it is, or I feel totally caught up in all of my plans and busyness, that just like that, there's that reminder that these are actually clouds. And in an instant, I can remember that through awareness, that's this sky-like aspect of my mind that is completely unobstructed, that is ultimately not changed or tainted by anything that comes through the sky, right? There's no storm strong enough that can take the sky down. The sky is here for all of it in a very steady and unmoved way. And so there's something that's so, for me, it's a really stabilizing image to just keep in mind in terms of also having that perspective, that ability to just kind of zoom out and say, okay, even though it can feel like I'm in the clouds, I am the clouds, I can have that reminder that I'm not, you know, and that actually what feels more close to my experience is this sky-like aspect that can be aware of everything. Everything that comes through. And then we just have more room, right? So it's like, there's this anger, and there's also this really beautiful song that I'm hearing right now that I would have missed if I were so caught in the clouds, right? Or in the midst of, or maybe being frustrated at somebody. Just by having that little bit of space, we might see in the frustration that there might be something that we can also appreciate about that person that wouldn't have been available before. So it's just interesting that having that little bit of room brings in this aspect of, and there's so much else also going on in this moment other than that one thing that I was so honed in on.
Yes, the cloud analogy is beautiful too, because it is a reminder, it serves as a reminder for me, at least in my experience, that everything is temporary. And that these clouds will pass by, And this notion of impermanence helps me get through moments that are extremely difficult, and also recognize in moments that are not difficult, that are extremely exciting and joyous, that everything is temporary, and an awareness and an attention to that, that is freeing almost in a way that allows me to not get so caught up in identifying with the moment or with the thing, and taking a step back, a zoom out at the situation, and appreciating it for what it is, or who it is, or whatever the case may be. So thanks for bringing that up, Greg. I think that is another, there's so much. I wish we had like 8 hours, yeah. Or we should do this like on a weekly basis, because that you have so much. It's so calming and it's so comforting, your delivery. And there's so much value and richness to take away from everything that you're saying, that also simplifies it in a way that, like, saying simplifies it doesn't do it justice, because it makes it sound like it's discrediting it, but it's simplified in such a beautiful way that is just so enriching. And we can speak to that for sure in our own life, as we've mentioned 100 times, if we haven't told you enough so far. We're so appreciative of your time and honored to have you, because you bring so much goodness to this that is so worthy of being shared on a platform that allows people to take in all of this. So thank you for spending so much time with us today. So please tell us where to find more about you and what you offer.
Yeah, thank you so much. So I just want to say it's been a total delight having this morning together with both of you, hearing you know, the things that have really landed for you, the way that this practice has impacted you has really been beautiful for me. So thank you both for the time. And also it's an honor to be invited to be on your podcast. In terms of how to practice together, there's a really wonderful platform called Allo Moves that I have a whole library of classes on. So Allo Moves is on demand. So there are both series and single classes that you can take, which I have poured a lot of my heart into. So I love those classes. And I also am really excited about 2 retreats I have coming up, and I'm co-leading them with a dear, dear friend of mine and a wonderful teacher. Her name is Megan Mook. And we have our first one happening this fall in October in the Hudson Valley, and our other one happening in Costa Rica next March, which I'm looking forward to both of them very much. And all of these details can be found on my website, which is jackiestewart.com. There are also practices on there that can be watched for free and easily. And then I also have a little video introduction on there about just kind of simplifying and breaking down what mindfulness and meditation are, because I think today we hear the words, you know, specifically mindfulness, we hear it come up all the time. And it's really nice to just have a little bit of context and background about what it is.
Mm-hmm. Love all of that. I will link your website in the show notes and your Instagram, if that is okay with you. I'm going to totally check out the retreats that are upcoming. Greg, Costa Rica sounds, is this a everyone, or is this a women only event, or how does this?
Everyone is welcome to join. We have, we have quite a few men signed up for our Hudson Valley retreat. So everyone's welcome to come. And, you know, it ranges. The way that we'll lead it is it'll really be accommodating for, you know, more beginner practitioners, but also those with a more advanced practice. I think people who have practiced for a long time will really get and understand the value of how, you know, these teachings are really timeless. I can hear something as a beginner and have my mind blown and have my life changed. And then I'll practice for 5 years, 10 years, however long, hear the same thing. But because of all of that experience of practice, it just lands in a very different way. And the way that we learn is so experiential, right? So it also comes at this level of kind of cognizing something at the intellectual level, having our mind blown. But then over time, it just sinks into our being more and more. And all of a sudden, maybe it's not all of a sudden, maybe it feels like all of a sudden, but after much practice, it's something that becomes a lived experience. It's something that we see in a much deeper way. And you know, for me, that's just so profound, you know, to have these teachings and these practices be able to meet us at whatever point on the path we are. Mm-hmm.
Yes, beautifully said. And I couldn't agree more. There are so many things that we revisit or that come up that were mind-blowing 8 years ago, but definitely reach us in a different way now and are still as mind-blowing, still as impactful. It's the same timeless practice, but it's still the tools in a different way.
It's still the tools. I mean, like, it's literally, these are just tools in the toolbox that are mm-hmm. just so valuable every day, you know? So
different iterations and variations of these tools and practices that make all the difference, all the difference. So thank you so much for being here, for sharing your morning with us, for sharing your knowledge and your experiences with us and our community. And I feel like there's so much that we didn't get to cover. So I may take you up on that offer to possibly do this again. We didn't touch on sound at all, which, mm-hmm. you know, is a huge part of the experience that we've had as well. So, but it's too much to do all in one hour. And so thank you so very much.
Thank you both. Thank you so much for just having this platform, for being in partnership with each other, having these beautiful conversations with various people, and for inviting me into it.
Absolutely.
Hey, yo. Congratulations on investing into yourself and your growth. I hope you found this episode to be beneficial and feel proud of yourself for showing up. If you found this episode helpful, please consider sharing with someone else who may benefit from it too. I'd love to hear from you, so hit me up on all socials at Cameo Elise Braun. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow for new episodes and updates. Also, it's super important to mention, this is intended for entertainment and education through experience. None of it is fully known to be fact and is not a replacement for professional advice from a therapist or doctor. Thank you so much for being here with me. And be sure to thank yourself for showing up.